Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the Affair Recovery Q&A call on September 12th, 2011. So let's get on with our questions today. First question. Help. Rick, can you give me some resources that you think might help me in dealing with my husband's porn addiction? So I don't know if you're asking for questions for you to help your husband with his porn addiction, which I'd say probably isn't a good idea because he needs to be dealing with it himself, maybe to understand it better. I really like The Porn Trap by Wendy Maltz, and whether your question is how you can help him or help yourself in dealing with the porn addiction, it would at least help you understand much about the porn addiction. The Porn Trap. Of course, I think that COSA, Co-Sex Addicts Anonymous, is a good program, as well as RCA. Now, let me give you some stuff here for you. I'm going to assume you're asking for yourself. COSA, you can reach them at www.heart-t-heart.org. And I think you could probably just Google COSA, and it's a recovery program for men and women who've been affected by compulsive sexual behaviors. I think you'll find that's going to be a good resource. A second one is Essanon, and you can reach them at Essanon.org, www.essanon.org. It's a program of recovery for those who've been affected, again, by sexual behaviors. So those two, I think, are good. I would also suggest some other reading. Hope and Freedom by Milton Magnus, and he is a counselor at First Baptist in Houston. I love Milton's work. 30 Days to Hope and Freedom from Sexual Addiction is another workbook that he has, and I think that, if you had read those books, they would certainly give you some ideas. And it also addresses some of the co-addict and things that, ways that they're affected. Another resource that, I like is there's a 12-step group for couples. I believe actually, Mark Laser started this very good program. It's called Recovering Couples Anonymous, RCA, and it's a couples group, and you can reach them at recovering-couples.org. So if there's an RCA group in your area, I think that would be another one that can be really helpful. Another one is porn-free.org, which I think has some good resources, things you can read. Finally, a workshop besides the one we do it through Harboring Hope that I really like is the Bethesda workshop, Marnie Free in Nashville, Tennessee, and certainly would highly recommend anything that Marnie does. So I would go check the Bethesda workshop. And in that Bethesda workshop, I'm trying to think, what's their address? It is hopeandfreedom.com. Hopeandfreedom.com is the Bethesda workshop website. So hopefully that'll give you a few resources to begin with. I think all of those you'll find to be helpful. And again, if you're looking for something for your mate in particular, the other one I would suggest is settingcaptivesfree.com. It's an online Bible study I think that can be useful. And I believe that settingcaptivesfree.com also has, now that I think about it, a Bible study for co-sex addicts, people married to sex addicts or with porn addicts, and that may also give you some help. So, thank you. That's a great question, and I'm glad you gave me a chance to put all those resources out there. Second question. Second question for today, dealing with triggers. Hi, Rick. Tom here from April-May EMS. We're doing much better. However, I'm having a hard time with what to say to Cindy when she has her moments on remembering my decisions in the past. Generally, they're just out of the blue, or she has come home alone. I apologize and tell her how sad I am that I've done this to her, but invariably I clam up. This really sets her off and gets her so mad at me until normal returns. I need some guidance and what to say and do. So Tom, again, one of the things I think we mentioned, and hopefully you've signed up for the Hope for Healing course, because I think you're going to find it to be very useful in kind of learning and working with other men in developing good habits on dealing with this, kind of new response patterns. And just remember, this is going to be such a long-term dance. Don't think it's going to get better. One of the guys on the call this week was just, you know, everybody is doing much better in their marriages, but they still talk about the discouragement, about the times when things still go back. And the reality is we've created such intense raw spots in our mate that it doesn't take much for that to be triggered and for them to begin to go into that pain, that place once again. So you want to know some guidance on what to say and do. One of the things when your mate is really struggling is just the need to, Tom, be a safe vessel of anger for her. And by a safe vessel of anger, just a place where you don't get defensive or you don't begin to stonewall. Typically, when we begin to stonewall, it is because we are flooding and we quit talking as a way of self-soothing, which then makes them feel abandoned and go kind of crazy. So, I mean, this may sound like a crazy suggestion, but when she is flooding and after you've already said, I feel horrible about hurting you, I loathe myself for doing that, I would just say, tell me more. And then get her to quit, continue to talk and stay engaged. But one of the things I do to stay engaged, and it is frightening to ask her to tell you how she's feeling, Tom. But one of the things you can do as you're doing that is, and the way I keep from mirroring Stephanie and flooding with her, I usually start with prayer. And the whole time I'm praying, just asking God to kind of be my peace. And I try to stay very, very focused spiritually while I listen to her. I try to stay in a position where I evaluate everything she says. I don't just necessarily accept it. If it's true, I want to let myself feel it. If it's not true, I want to let it pass. If it's something I need to think about, I'll ask for clarification if I'm not sure. But I don't just necessarily allow, I don't want shame to be what's driving me at that moment. I just want to be able to feel her pain. I want to try to reflect back to Stephanie as much as possible how I think this must be making her feel, which in turn, and how bad I feel that, how I feel about myself as a result of how she's feeling. But if I can continue to reflect emotions back to her, feelings, that must be making you feel unwanted, uncared for. It must make you feel totally unloved. Whatever those emotions are, when I can reflect those, that is very, very helpful for her. And I think you'll find that that's going to be helpful. Here are the feelings that I typically we'll try to use, and this is in that hurt exercise we did at EMS, but I try to use words like, you must be feeling lonely, dismissed, and unimportant, frustrated, helpless, on guard, uncomfortable, scared, hurt, hopeless, helpless, intimidated, threatened, panicked, rejected, like I don't matter, You know, like you don't matter, ignored, inadequate, shut out and alone, confused and lost, embarrassed, ashamed, blank, afraid, shocked, sad, forlorn, disappointed, isolated, let down, numb, humiliated, overwhelmed, small, insignificant, unwanted, vulnerable, worried. These are all kind of softer relational feelings. And if you can use those sorts of emotions with her as you're listening to her and reflecting back to her, she's going to feel connected with you in that moment, and it's something that will kind of give her that relational air that she needs to move on. So I hope you'll be able to do better in the future and that you and Cindy can just continue to move forward and get involved in that Hope for Healing group. My husband and I are going to couples counseling, and the counselor is working with my husband to try and determine what was the root cause of the infidelity. What emotions, feelings were happening, and what did these women do that allowed him to cross the line and be in what he called the zone, where he thought of nothing else. In our discussion, I brought up two different women. I know these women, my husband had affairs with, and these were very needy women and had issues with their marriages. And I'm a very strong, confident woman. My husband talked about how he always wanted to help people, the oldest of four, coaching our son's team, etc. That is his nature, to help people, and that is how he is made. The counselor alluded to the fact that my husband's issues, one reason for the affair, could be that he has a codependency issue, and that may be some of what he has an issue with. What are your thoughts on codependency and impact it has on infidelity? After two affairs, I'm just fearful if he doesn't figure this out, it will happen again. Becky, again, in terms of relapse prevention, the best thing I know, honestly, is the Hope for Healing group. I don't know if he's taking that, because we talk a lot about codependency in the Hope for Healing group for both the men and the women. Codependency, interestingly enough, I always try to look at what is real. You know, actually what is real is, I think, 1 Corinthians 13. It's love. Codependency to me is really kind of a counterfeit love. It is an inverted narcissism, where it's still all about me and being able to feel special as a result of, or maybe desperate. It's still about how other people see me and are responding to me. And it's how hard I work to get others to respond back to me in that inverted narcissism. But still, it's 100% about me and not really about them. Love is others focused. Codependency is me focused. Even a performer can be codependent. Let me give you an example. My daughter had extreme performance anxiety, and she was a commercial music major when she was in college. So she was going to be a studio musician or performer. Well, performance anxiety isn't really a very good thing for somebody who's making a career of performing. So we had sent her to a psychologist, and we had sent her to... we tried to find any place that ultimately would be able to help her, but pretty much to no avail. And finally, the person that cured her was her voice teacher right before her junior recital. And here's what she did. Right before Megan went out, and she knew all about Megan's performance anxiety, she looked her right in the face and said, "You know what, Megan? You are disgusting. You know, you are probably one of the most self-centered, selfish, inconsiderate people I have ever met." Now, my daughter was a people pleaser to the max. And so she was just absolutely shocked. And her teacher said it quite vehemently. And here's what she followed up with. She said, "You're always so concerned about what other people think about you. You are completely self-centered. You never consider the message that God has for you to deliver to other people. You're only concerned about how they're responding to you. You know, you do things not for their sake. You do things to get something back from them. You're trying to suck, you know, the affirmation and validation from them. You're not really concerned for them. You're just totally self-centered, and that's disgusting to me. And she began to realize that, you know, her teacher was right. There was a codependent relationship she had with the audience. Rather than caring about the audience and trying to deliver the message that God was giving her to deliver to them, instead, she was trying to suck something from them. She was just thinking about what they were thinking about her. And even if I'm thinking about other people, if I'm thinking about what they're thinking about me, I'm still 100% totally self-centered. And that's ultimately codependency. It looks good because we give, but the motivation is to get. So when somebody's desperate for validation and they're codependent, what they'll do is they'll try to find needy people to help. But they're not really loving the other people. Now, the other people think they're loving them, but they're not really loving them. What they're really doing is they're using them to get what I call their narcissistic supply. They're using them, that kind of that self-centered supply. They're using them to get that validation and affirmation they need, ultimately, to be happy. So somebody who's codependent is always vulnerable to an affair if they lean that direction, if that's kind of their bent. Because they're going to be looking for people who are a vanity mirror, who reflect, who give them affirmation. And if you're a strong, confident woman, as you mentioned in this question, that may not be something he gets from you necessarily, because you, on the other hand, instead of, I think, you know, reflecting appreciation, for instance, you may not feel like you need to appreciate him that much, simply because you do it yourself. He may not do that much for you in that sense. So hopefully he'll begin to understand what true love is. And if he can begin to really love people, then ultimately he won't be vulnerable in the same way. Something you may be able to work at is making sure also that you love him well. And I hope he can learn to love you well. But all of this stuff is really talked about at length in the Hope for Healing course, so that would be something I would say would be useful for him if he hasn't done that yet. So that concludes, I believe, all of our questions for the day. I want to thank everybody for joining the call, and I look forward to talking to you in a few weeks. God bless.